two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, and welcome to the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. I'm Jason Lee, along with Amy Donaldson. Today, we have three people today. This is going to be a full, lots of different voices. Pay attention. We're going to start off with Everett. I'm going to try to get this right. Kelly Polo. Okay. He's a district director for
athletics. The official title is coordinator of school services, but one of my big responsibilities is over athletics.
Okay. For the Utah Interscholastic Athletic Administrator Association?
I'm president-elect coming up this next year, but I'm at the district office, Naples School District office, over all athletics, so I work with all the high schools within our district.
Okay, and it's for the state of Utah?
Yes.
And then, okay, next, we got Mark Hunter. Okay, this is fun. So the executive director of the Utah Interscholastic Athletic Administrator Association, and then on the phone, past president Richard Barton of the National Interscholastic Athletic Administrator Association. Gentlemen, hello.
And I think all of these fellows I met, they were athletic directors for high schools, and some of them work at the district level. Mark's retired.
Yes.
But so they all helped administer prep sports at your local school. So that's
so
where Mark they're coming
says,
from.
You know, I got out of it, but they call me back. You know, it's like Michael Corleone.
You're never out of it.
I get out, and then all of a sudden, they bring me back in again.
It's like the firm. You can never leave.
You can never leave.
No, that's how I feel about high school sports. I left sports, but we're still having this conversation,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
We invited you guys here today because there's an issue that you've been talking to legislators about, and part of that is compensating. Athletic directors or educators more fairly, or trying to keep them and make it a professional level. Because back in the day, it was you're just in charge of ordering buses and making sure coaches get hired and fired and stuff like that. Right now, it's a lot more complicated. So why don't you? I don't know which one of you wants to take the lead, Mark. Sort of what you guys have been working on and how the job has evolved.
Well, I think I'll turn it over to Rich to start this rolling because he's the one that actually started this with the legislature, although our association's been trying for years and years to increase the certification level. But, Rich, I'll let you begin.
So, well, Rich,
appreciate it. A certified athletic administrator is an insurance policy for a school and a school district. And, it's interesting through the years, the position of athletic director has grown in responsibility and importance, and especially in stewardship. In fact, each year, based on some of the state school board requirements, our coaches, head and assistant coaches, all have to have 8 requirements checked off every year before they can be with student participants. And I guess the ironic thing is the person with stewardship over the 100-plus coaches at a school requires no prior preparation, no certification, no training, and in many cases doesn't receive ongoing training. And so one thing that we've strived to do, and it's also what's happened in some other states, is we've tried to make certification of athletic administrators something that's required. We were successful a few years ago in getting the UHSAA to put it in their handbook that it's recommended that an athletic director be certified within 2 years of being on the job. But, you know, a recommendation doesn't push somebody to take the needed courses and also to, of their own initiative, take and pass an exam that is required to be certified. But we, you know, some people might see this proposed legislation as dealing with money. We see it as a student protection bill. There's a big gap in our high schools that needs to be filled. Teachers, counselors, principals all have required certification and ongoing professional development. But the person with stewardship over the largest and most problematic department at a high school requires nothing but a pulse. And we have only a third or less of our athletic directors at our 150-plus high schools in Utah who are certified. And even those that are certified, it's hard to keep them in the profession. And so what we have is a revolving door that leads to inexperienced people in this stewardship. And really, you know, we know bad things can happen in extracurricular sports, no matter our best, you know, despite our best efforts. But really, why should we be surprised when we hear things on the news related to problems with our extracurricular coaches and participants when the person with stewardship responsibility, you know, requires no certification, no prior preparation and training for this crucial and most important job that, you know, the athletic department doesn't shut down during mm-hmm. the summer. These individuals spend the most time with these students.
Richard, I'm sorry. I got a million questions. Number one, what in the world, what kind of high school do you have that has 150 people? Because when I was in high school, I realized this was decades ago.
It was a couple years ago.
I went to a school with 3,000 students. Yeah. They did not have 150 people in any, certainly whatever they called an athletic department. Yeah. And all of our the coaches were teachers. So they had that certification at the very least. They weren't just, you know, guys off the street or women. And so I am flabbergasted that, A, that you have money for 150 extra people when, you know, we don't pay teachers enough to begin with. And I recognize that, you know, if you in my day, that was a dual thing. So you probably got paid a little bit for each, right? Mm-hmm. And in Chicago, school teachers make a decent living. So I'm that's bizarre to me.
Times have changed, Jason. I hate to tell you.
150 people? That's crazy. Yeah,
just think about a football staff now.
But I don't care. But I'm saying that's too many for education.
It's not enough.
Right.
150 people just for sports?
Yeah.
Please. No. I don't even know how wasteful that is.
Well, but
honestly,
you're talking, my guess is 60% of those are not in the school, possibly more at some schools. Even head coaches now. Some head coaches in high-profile sports are not at the school.
They're paraprofessionals.
So they come out from outside.
Mm-hmm. They come from outside. For
why
example,
do we, why do we allow that?
Because we cannot. You cannot fill the positions from within. You cannot hire.
Yeah, if I can.
Yeah, go for it, Richard.
If I can share with you, I'm an old timer as far as an AD. I'm 24 years as an AD, and when I started, 80% of my head coaches were in the building as full-time teachers. There used to be a lot of people that would go into education as a teacher slash coach. That doesn't happen anymore. People crazy enough to spend the time. The parents. It's a different world now with parents, and they use the word investment. Mm-hmm. A lot of coaches, you know, there's huge turnover. now I have less than 40% of my head coaches are teachers. And I used to take for granted all those years that would go by and I never had to replace one head coach. Now I hope to make it through a fall season, a winter season, without having to do it, because, you know, and there's not a lot of money. You know, Hutch mentioned about how many assistant coaches are on a football staff. I'm at a mid-level 3A high school. We have 13 people on our football staff, and that's not because 13 people are all getting paid some money, because we have a small pool of money for those assistants to be divided up in how much they get paid, and majority of them just don't take money.
Wow.
But
every
time, you know, people think everybody's just jumping in line to apply for a high school head job. We're fortunate if we can, you know, get two or three people to apply for a head job when we have an open.
I want Everett to take the last minute and tell us what it's like to what kind of candidates, like what are some of the issues people are facing as coaches?
Yeah, I think that's what, you know, as you're talking about the paraprofessionals, I'm a former high school principal, and one of the hardest things was always trying to find a coach. So you were talking about especially the smaller level sports that we have.
Yeah, yeah.
But as a high school football coach, I mean, we're paying these guys a little over $3,000, and it's pretty much a year round job.
Mm-hmm. $3,000 total?
Oh, total. Yeah. That's what they get. Yeah. And a lot of people, even when I was coaching, a lot of people thought I was making a lot of money doing this. And I said, no. Yeah. I said, you watch those $1 million contracts and multi-million dollar contracts.
Well, first of all,
that doesn't happen at our level.
Have you seen what they pay high school coaches in Texas?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
This is not Texas.
No, I totally get that. But I remember when I first heard that they pay $100,000 to a football coach. And I thought they got their priorities completely wrong.
And that's all he does.
Right, and this is his only job.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he can get it's almost like having a college job.
Listen, so I know we have to go to break, but
break
when
now,
we come back, I want to tell you
when we
got to
come back, we'll do this. Gosh, I didn't know what I was getting myself into. My mind officially blown. You're listening to Voices of Reason.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. Jason Lee, Amy Donaldson. Today we have a full crew. Everett, I'm going to mess this up every time.
Kelly Paulo.
It's just like it says.
Just like it sounds.
Okay, Mark Hunter and Richard Barton, they are involved with the Interscholastic Athletic Administrators Association. Richard is the past president of the national organization, and Everett and Mark with the Utah, the state version of this. They have been informing me that high school sports has changed over the last 35 years, and I am amazed at what is going on. But Amy wanted to bring up because we've
I just think there's a story that illustrates sort of the way it's changed, right? So I think it's important also to keep in mind we're talking about 150,000 kids participating in athletics, and you're asking these coaches and they're overseeing the experience that these kids have, and the purpose of the Utah High School Activities Association is participation. It's not scholarships. It's not professional contracts. it's participation. They want as many kids participating in athletics and activities as possible because they do better. They have higher self-esteem. They get better grades.
Activities being music or
could be anything. They do debate. They do dural team. They do sports. You can find their on their website all the stuff they oversee. But 150,000 kids are participating in that every year. Let's keep that in mind. And so it doesn't seem to me to be out of whack, but I covered it for 20 years. And one of the coaches that I covered on a regular basis, because he always had a good team, was Jay Welk, who was a men's basketball coach up at Davis High School. And he was one of the best there was. They had some amazing teams, were involved in some amazing games. And at the end of he took a job with the district and was talking about retirement. But I remember talking to him and he said, I just cannot do the job demands anymore. And it's not just that you're not making any money. Your stipend is $750 or so-ish. And you're asked to do out of season workouts, out of season league play.
Why is that not illegal?
It's not just that it's not illegal, Jason. It's if you cannot make a high school team anymore that's halfway competitive, if you're not playing accelerated ball, club ball, I used to do stories on them at the end of my career where if you made a high school roster and you weren't already in a farm league of some kind, you were a story. I just showed up the day of volleyball tryouts. I'd never touched a volleyball and I made the JV team. That doesn't happen anymore. The kids are, getting involved in sports at such a young age, but also dealing with college recruiters and what parents want you to send college recruiters on behalf of their children. The demands on high school coaches is so significant, and it's burning coaches out at a younger. I mean, they're not lasting as long. When I started, there were coaches who'd been coaching 40 years. I will be shocked in 10 years if you have 40-year tenured coaches in most of the sports. You might still see it in cross country or something, although that's getting just as high pressure. So I think that that's kind of what's behind this push for legislation is as high school sports has evolved, the jobs that oversee it, that you have to have CPR training now, you have to have sexual assault and predatory, how to avoid being a victim. You have to have all this training. What's concussion training? What's the protocol? But the people in charge are not required to do that. And I think every high school doesn't even have an athletic trainer, even part-time.
So, Mark, I'm going to have you come in as how do we even begin to address this? I know that you guys have put forth some legislation, but how can you adequately deal with what Amy just described?
Well, so part of the reason that we're addressing this legislation, trying to get it passed is, and it's a point that Rich brought up, is that the person in the building that's over the largest amount of kids in the building is the athletic director. He doesn't have to be certified. As Rich said, he just has to be there. Teachers have to be certified.
Apparently just alive.
Assistant principals have to be certified. Principals have to be certified. Superintendents have to be certified. The State Board of Education.
Your librarian is usually certified.
The State Board of Education wants a list of every coach in your building, assistants included, which can be up to 100 or more, as Rich said. And you have to list what they've done and check off that they're certified. The person who provides that list doesn't have to be certified.
How does that even happen? I mean, that sounds ridiculous, honestly.
It happens because the thing evolved faster than the ability of anyone to know. So some schools didn't even, when I started, they didn't even have an athletic director. So I'd call like the football coach and say, can you help me? Or the volleyball coach had been there 20 years, so she knew everybody, and I'd get phone numbers from that person. Mark knows this because Mark and I, Mark tried to bring a level of professionalism with UIAAA. And I would say, like, get people together. Let's try to figure this. Just having like a system of communication is a thing that has evolved in the last two decades that I've watched.
So this has grown faster than our ability to, keep up with it.
Go ahead, Rich.
Yeah. Amy, you bring up an excellent point. The reason this is a missing gap is because the role and responsibility and stewardship of an AD has changed so rapidly, what's been put on our plate. It's changed quick enough that even key decision makers at the district level, at the high school level, it's changed quick enough. A lot of those people don't even understand what the role and the responsibility is. I've said it a number of times. I said the least understood position in a school district is an athletic director, because there's hardly anybody who's walked in those shoes. Some of the people that are walking in that shoes are ready to throw those shoes away, especially coming off the,
and these are Nikes
coming off the, coming off the pandemic. This is happening around the country. Is a lot of even longtime athletic directors, after testing athletes weekly and cancellation, rescheduling of events, a lot of people are saying, "Hey, I can't do this anymore." And when we talk about the paraprofessionals. One of the reasons I authored a course on coaching coaches to be education-based leaders was my challenge of trying to bring up paraprofessionals up to speed with what an education-based coach is. It's different than a coach in any other realm. And bringing those people up to speed with what an education-based coach is a tremendous responsibility for all of us to help them to coach in a way that it is truly an extension of the classroom. Because I've always said it, the last classroom of the day is the most influential one, and that is the extracurricular classroom.
So, I mean, Everett, you've probably run into these kids. You've coached these kids, right? That I was one of them. I wouldn't have graduated high school were it not for sports. So why, like some people will say, like Jason just said, this is misplaced priorities, I guess, money, right? Why, how do you justify spending more money on athletics?
I think one of the things that's always come out is talking about, this is not academically minded. And I've heard a lot of people talk about that. I'll tell you, there are a lot of us that probably wouldn't have graduated if it wasn't for sports. And if you look, I actually did my doctoral dissertation was on this, that kids who come to school, I mean, we've all heard this. When you come to school, attendance, grades, whatever, behavior-wise, it was always the athletes that always turned out to be, they were the ones that were there all the time. They had better behavior because they wanted to play in the game on Friday night. So a lot of those things have always been in place. We've always talked about it. But I did a dissertation that just proved that outright. It said their GPAs were with what end-of-level testing we did in Utah. I mean, like I said, they really correlated extremely well. So when people come to me and say, well, it's really not academic, and I said, I think it's one of the greatest motivators and incentives to actually be in school. And I think that's what you're finding out is like you're seeing a lot of these athletes who have been tremendously successful. I mean, we look at Fortune 500 folks and what they do. Mm-hmm. But I do look at it from the standpoint of saying these are kids that are doing well in our – like when you talk about the six C's, these are the type of people who collaborate. They have the ability. They're great citizens. I mean, they're just really functioning highly, within our society. And we hear the few things that happen that some of these athletes, they do some crazy things. There's no doubt about it. And but those are far and few between. But the general populace, they're tremendous.
I think also people don't understand the influence of a good coach in
Absolutely.
A school community
Absolutely.
Or good coaches, I should
Absolutely.
Say, plural. But I know that for my kid did not play on the football team at Taylorsville High. Do you know who her most influential person in high school was? The high school football coach. Mm.
How did she even get to know the football coach?
He knows everybody. I'm telling you, a good
connectivity.
Yeah,
connectivity.
A good coach notices who's in class.
Absolutely.
Notice who doesn't come to class. She took an exercise class and wasn't much into exercise, and he noticed, and he took it upon himself to make sure she made it to class, or to let me know if she wasn't in class, and to talk to her about why this was going to matter to her 5-6 years down the road. And he was able to say things to her that I could not. And a very valuable tool for a parent to call a favorite teacher or coach and say, can you help me? This is a situation I have. What would you do? And I learned a ton from coaches about how to be a better parent. And so I think when we say it's one, it's either or, when we're talking about kids and high school kids and education related sports, it's not either or. It has to be both.
When we come back, we'll continue this discussion that I am learning. I'm in class today. I'll tell you that right now.
School is in session.
School is in session, and athletics, we're finding out how important it is and how many changes need to be made so that it's more functional for the students and for the people who have these jobs, which are very important as we come to find out. You're listening to Voices of Reason. Jason Lee, Amy Donaldson, back with the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason, joined today by Everett Calipolo. And he's the, I'm going to do this all at one time because this makes a little more sense. And Mark Hunter, both involved with the Utah Interscholastic Athletic Administrator Association, and Richard Barton, who is past president of the national, IAAA?
NIAAA.
Exactly.
That's right.
Well, no, the national IAAA.
Yeah. Okay, so yes. Rich is also the certification director for Utah.
And that's what's important here, because we're talking about how there needs to be more certification to help improve the way athletic departments, which are the largest departments in high schools, I come to find out, how they're run, and they provide stewardship for these students. And Richard explained stewardship for us. But Mark, so what is it exactly that you're trying to get to with the legislation that you're proposing?
Well, we would like each athletic administrator in Utah to be a CAA, Certified Athletic Administrator, or Certified Master Athletic Administrator. That would include a competency exam, the four required legal courses at the national level that include the 14 legal duties, hazing, ADA, all of those types of things, Title IX, et cetera, the three introductory courses on athletic administration, and then two optional courses in the 600 and 700 level.
So how much are we paying extra for this?
Part of a school's professional development, I think the CAA to sign up is maybe $250.
No, I'm talking
but
about
– But I mean, will they make more money?
Right?
Or
yeah.
There is no compensation.
Well, no, there's no. If you're certified – yeah. For example, I was certified as a CAA in 1997 at Jordan High School. I was one of the first 20 in the United States to get a CMAA in 2000. There was never any extra money because I was certified. I got extra money as the athletic director to supervise events, but there was never extra money because I was certified.
Well, and actually, the way you described it, everybody else is certified except for this athletic director who is the boss of all of these people.
That's the
Which
sad the, truth of the
– There's a lot of irony going on there.
So, absolutely.
So tell me, and maybe Richard might be the best person if he's over certification to address this, but like what value does the certification or do these classes, this training add to their daily duties?
Well, we have over 53 leadership training courses. Some of those are required courses for certification and also for the certified master attainment. But these courses, you know, when we take these 53 courses, we take what we learn back to our coaches' meetings.
53 courses? Jeez.
And like Mark alluded to some of the, you know, I just completed authoring a second course, partnering with parents being the leading reason why coaches are getting out of the profession. And it was a two-year process to prepare, author, and deliver that course, goes through a couple of pilots. And so it's quite a comprehensive process for a course to be approved and then taught to the membership and taught in all 50 states. But courses like the one I just mentioned, partnering with parents, hazing, sexual harassment, Title IX, social media, transgender, maintaining appropriate professional boundaries, proper management of funds, concussion management, sportsmanship. The list goes on and on. And these are all 4-hour courses that we take what we learn, we bring it back to our individual schools and share. But if you were to go to a lot of key decision makers for schools and say, what do you provide to prepare somebody to be in the role of AD? And then follow-up question, what do you require of them ongoing, and what do you provide professional development-wise? you'd get some interesting responses and some people, you know, who can't respond. Then you do have a few who have taken the time to learn, to ask. Rick Robbins, Canyon School District Superintendent, he is a leader in this legislative effort for us, and he's taken the time to find out from his people what they need. He pushes them to get certified. He's a proponent of full-time AD status in the schools. Hmm. And
well, he's an old coach, too, we got to say. He knows the value of an AD.
Player.
Yeah, he knows the value. But they're one of the few districts, I think, that have a district level, like Granite does too. Not every district has a district level AD, right?
That's true, but Canyon's at the present time does not have one.
Oh, they don't have one.
They're looking to get one. I don't know that they have one. I think it may be part of another person's job description.
Yeah.
I know Davis has one. I know Granite has one. I know.
Well, we talk about how things have changed so quick in the position of AD. A couple of the first districts to hire a district AD, and I think of one in particular, they hired a well-known name college athlete who hadn't been a high school AD, who didn't know the role, but it was a big name hire. And that individual didn't stay in that position very long, you know. And so sometimes
because
key decision
why?
Makers,
but also didn't
not
do
knowing
it,
what they don't know,
they do, and also didn't do a good job.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So, no question.
Yeah,
it happens.
No, I mean, I think that people don't understand how unique the high school landscape has become. Like it, I remember a time when Mark Van Wagner, who represents you at HSAA, he's their attorney, said. There was a time when we were protecting high school, club sports from high school. High school would, mm-hmm. you know, so the rules were meant because high school was it. That was the pinnacle. Now the rules protect high school from club, from club sports, because there are these so many other elements out there that it's almost like farm leagues and professional. And now with name, image, and likeness. Coming to high school sports, I mean, the demands on a coach, if you think about how many coaches are getting out because it's just not worth the $750 you're paying them, how many athletic directors are saying, I don't even get the fun part of working with the kids. Like, that's the only reason a lot of guys show up and gals, because the kids are awesome. And they love working with them.
And when it comes down to it, this is all for the kids, really?
Absolutely.
I mean, if you think about it, right? This is for their enrichment. And somehow we've gotten that askew.
Well, Story, we had an AD, and this is not totally unique, but he was asked by his school in the spring, we want you to take over as AD next year for the guy who's jumping out. He came to our spring conference. He took a couple of the legal courses. He went back home to his school and said, finding out that I have legal responsibility for all this, he said, no, thanks. Somebody else can do it. And there have been others that have said the same thing, because there's a lot of weight on the shoulders of an AD. We're sending kids out year-round in some of the most problematic areas, motel rooms, bus trips, locker rooms.
Why are we doing year-round? I'm sorry, Richard. I'm a reporter, so I got to stop
anymore,
some stuff here.
Anymore now, you have team camps, you have summer tournaments.
How is that legal?
You have seven on.
How is that? These kids, they're not going to school. This is outside of school.
It's not
right?
just. It's not just because if you don't do it, a private company will do it, and then the kids who don't have the money to join the private club can't compete. So Kearns High School has to hold his own football camp or their own basketball camp, because the other kids across town are going to private basketball camps with Nike and Adidas and Under Armour. And if he wants to even compete, even at any level, he has to have his kids in year-round programs, and they can't afford it. So the high school coach does it for nothing.
Wow. Okay.
Peanuts.
You'd rather have them under your wing than somebody else's wing.
You know, at least your heart's in the right spot.
And, you know, these things are optional. So when you're talking about the summer camps and those type of things, I mean, we, at the schools, we always say these are optional. They're not required. But you're right, Amy. When you when you made the comment, the truth of the matter is, Amy, what you said was a while back, which is these kids, they want to get better. Parents want their kids to get better. At this point, we have and how many athletes do we have in our school systems right now? 157,000, you know, throughout the state of Utah, just on the high school level, that are participating in athletics, and it just shows you this is the number, and they want to get better. And a lot of these kids know that less than 1% are going to make it to the next level from JC all the way up to Division I.
And most of them are not participating, thinking they're going to get college scholarships.
That's right.
I also think it's important to remember what another great coach, Bobby Porter, said to me when I asked him if he had the ability to keep his kids from saying things like the N-word in competition. He said, absolutely, I have what they want. I can get them to do things that no teacher or parent can do because I have what they want.
When we come back in our last segment, you know what? I always think of myself as a relatively well-informed person, but I never had kids, right? So this is, you know, it's foreign to me in some way, and I just have to go back to my high school. Man, you guys.
We were lucky.
You don't even know. We all know, right? It is so much more difficult, and we as a society, I think in some ways we've gotten things, you know, out of whack, but I understand that now that this is the situation, we got to deal with it the way it is. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion. You're listening to Voices of Reason. Amy Donaldson, Jason Lee, Voices of Reason. Today, joined by Everett Calipolo, Mark Hunter, and Richard Barton. We're talking about high school sports. And again, I'm a kid. I'm a man with no children. And, you know, I don't know what I don't know. And I'm hearkening back to my days in high school. And life has changed so much.
High school sports is not the same.
It's to even think that it's a year-round I mean, it used to be that you had a break so that you could, you know, be a kid or do whatever. Now, there's no such thing. So, Mark, how does you guys are trying to develop a way that athletic directors can have stewardship over all these programs in a way that's certified so that they know the rules and they know their responsibilities.
But there's some professionalism
right.
Yeah,
in that,
in the ranks.
Considering everybody else has to have these certifications. But you're running up against a lot of things. It's a lot of responsibility. There's not a lot of money in it, despite the fact that it is something that is, I would consider, kind of big business if you really think about it. Somebody's getting paid, but it doesn't seem to be the people in charge of it necessarily. How do you address some of this stuff?
Well, let me clarify this as far as the state legislature goes. There is money in school districts for highly certified teachers, national board certified teachers. The same company that certifies National Board Certified Teachers is the same company that certifies the NIAAA with its certification. When I was still working, I went to my board, not to my board, my district, and said, I'm a National Certified Teacher because I have this certification. I'm a CMAA. They said, no, you're not. I said, no, it's the same company that does this. The legislature has also in the past, I want to say 3 or 4 years ago, help me with this, Amy, mm-hmm. They made a special $5,000 per teacher for special ed teachers because there was a high turnover, because they couldn't keep them in there. Mm-hmm. And you can have 7 or 8 special ed teachers in a high school depending on how big your high school is. So that could be up to 40,000 a high school possibly. What we're asking is that the legislature, separate from any money that goes to any district, so this money doesn't come out of any district. It's not money that is earmarked for them. We're asking if you're a CAA, Certified Athletic Administrator, you get a stipend from the legislature for $2,500 a year. If you're a Certified Master Athletic Administrator, it's $5,000 a year. And everyone out there is thinking, oh, this is money, blah, blah, blah. They're doing it in their head. Right now with the 38 CAAs we have in Utah and the 10 CMAAs, now I'm talking active.
Yes.
That's $145,000. That's
peanuts.
That's a principal salary in some districts.
Yeah. Right. So let me ask you, are there would that help turnover? Would that reduce turnover to do that? And do you still have to pay for the education part yourself?
I I'm not aware of when I got my CAA and my CMA, my school paid for the classes that I took, and they paid for my certification out of their professional development budget.
Okay.
There are very few athletic administrators that I'm aware of that this comes out of their own pocket, because there's so much money in professional development.
Okay.
For,
all right.
For
so,
employees.
So do you think it would reduce the turnover then? Because right now you have a turnover issue.
I think it would. I think it would, because they're saying, well, think about it. I'm going to get this extra $2,500. It's not coming from
But it's not annually, district. Is it?
Yeah, we're asking annually.
Okay, so that's, that helps. But I mean, okay. $2,500 is not going to change anybody's life.
You're not a teacher, man.
Okay. Look at it this way.
They deserve to be paid more than $2,500.
For the Well, this is in addition to whatever they make at their district and whatever stipend they get as athletic administrator. This is all separate from that.
Okay.
$145,000 a year right now. We expect it could get up to $300,000 once more
people
become certified.
If everybody gets certified. Yeah.
Right. Out of a $21.7 billion budget. Let me put this in terms of a first-year teacher. A first-year teacher maybe gets hired now for $50,000, which is a lot more than the $9,000 I signed on for in 79. Of that $50,000 budget, we're asking for 33 cents. It's 0.0006% of the state budget. You can't buy a candy bar for 33 cents.
No,
even at
cannot.
The dollar store, you can't buy that. And for the insurance that it gives, for the training, for the additional training that would come to athletic administrators, that would filter down to the coaches, that would filter down to our kids, and that's what this is about. That's mm-hmm. why it's called the Student Protection Bill. Because we make good decisions in the first place. Don't be like these lawsuits that you read across the U.S. where kids do crazy things because their coaches let them do crazy things, or their ADs.
Or the coaches are doing stupid things. Yeah.
Stupid things.
Yeah, because they didn't have a tiny bit of training or a little bit of knowledge.
Right.
Or,
you know what? I'm not going to let them off that easy.
Okay.
Because they do stupid things because the people in charge not using their best judgment. I mean, we always leave it up to, well, they weren't trained for it. These are adults. They're
exactly.
They're not supposed to be stupid. And the things they're being involved in are just – they're not common sense. And so I shouldn't let them off the hook. Well, we shouldn't let them off the hook.
Absolutely.
If they
that's a whole nother.
Don't blame it on the lack of training, because it sounds like to me that they should have known that already.
No, but I think, like, looking at Title IX, I know really great coaches who went to the Title IX training that the U had a year ago. And I had two different people reach out to me and say, did you know this? And I said, of course I knew this, right? They did not know it. And they're smart. You know, highly trained people, probably more educated than me is on paper. I do think it is a matter of training. I do think there are things you just don't know because you haven't run into it, or you haven't had that. You haven't given it to you in a way that you're thinking of, like, obvious things, like letting kids do stupid things when they're staying at an overnight trip or whatever. But I'm talking about how to make your sports accessible to all kids. That's required by federal law.
Yeah, but that's not because you're doing something stupid. That's just, like you say, that is lack of information necessarily. I'm talking about the things you're talking about.
The bigger issue, everyone pays attention to that. The bigger issue is, can everybody at your school access and participate in athletics and activities? And right now, the answer to that is no. And we've had girls have to sue in a situation where if somebody had been a little bit more educated, or they'd had a different perspective, they would have understood how they could give access to everyone more equally. And I think that's part of what I have always been bothered by, is if you just grab, you know, the teacher who has a prep period and say, you're the new AD, what incentive does he or she have to take these extra classes, to do this extra work, right? And it doesn't – I mean, $2,500, a lot of people are going to say, that's nothing, that's peanuts, whatever. It's we appreciate you. I would take $2,500, and it would mean a lot in the right situation. Does it solve every problem? No. But I do think it goes a long way to saying, this is a spot and a position of importance at our school, in our school community. And we really want to make sure that people understand how important it is and why it needs to be somebody who isn't you're not changing it over every single year.
I was going to say that. I said that professional development you're talking about. This is the greatest argument for professional development.
Just for we got about 2 minutes. I just keep going.
And one of the things that's really happening through this is like when we get together and we're educated and like with UIAAA. I know the first time I showed up, I was thinking I went to the state conference back in 2008, and I thought, oh, I guess this is going to be just a golfing fest. That's what we're going to do.
That's what I thought, too.
But then I met Hutch, and I realized it wasn't going to be a golfing fest. It was you're going to be involved. It's a professional development. I mean, we're in classes. It's really communicating with each other, collaborating, and really finding out what is it that – how do you deal with transgender issues? What are the Title IX issues that we really have to deal with? So I now have a – and since I'm part of the national level, too – I have this ability to be able to call anybody. I can call Hutch anytime, Rich anytime.
Why is it
and
Hutch,
ask those questions.
Way.
What's that?
I've heard you be called Hutch a lot here. Mark
Hunter
doesn't
like that's a great story.
That's a great story that we don't have time for.
We don't have time for.
Wow.
We'll tell you off the air. Let me
finish with this, and I'll quote from Dr. Rick Robbins, the superintendent at Canyons School District, my former district. And boy, I would have loved to have had him as a superintendent. But he said and has continued to say, athletics is the front door of your school. It's the front porch. It's what everybody sees. Think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Think about it. That's the and Amy
they don't
knows
see
this.
Your math
it's the
class.
First thing.
Yeah.
They don't
yeah.
come and say, I want to talk to that highly certified math teacher, Mr. Hunter.
No, kids don't shop
for a math teacher or an English teacher.
You want to go to a school that's going to help your kid go to college and not. I mean, mostly academic, right?
It is mostly academic. But athletics is the front.
It is the front
door to your school. It's to your community. People, particularly in the smaller communities in Utah, for example, where Rich is. That's when you talk about a Friday night in Richfield, they'll pack that stadium. It may be more packed than, let's say, a Friday night at Jordan High, because in Sandy there's Jordan, then
Alta.
You've got Alta right in Midvale, you've got Corner Canyon and Draper, you got Brighton up in Cottonwood Heights.
Yep.
Yeah, they're all. You can drive within 2 or 3 miles and get to another school. You can't do that in Richfield.
I got you. All right,
but also, it is a community thing. I know people who don't have kids like you who go every Friday night to the football games, or they have season tickets to the volleyball team's games. Like, it is a community event. And so it isn't just when a school suffers or struggles, it's the community suffers and struggles.
I want to say thank you to all of you. You've helped me. And though I've given thousands upon thousands of dollars, probably tens of thousands at this point, because I don't have any kids, to the Canyon School District, I want all of those kids to be able to do whatever they need to do, because our society is better served by, you know, everybody else's kids, you know, having a good place to go. God, I can't believe my computer is doing this to me right now. But okay, so I'm going to say Everett Calipolo, Mark Hunter, and Richard Barton, thank you all for joining us. I really appreciate it. And best of luck with the legislature. Get all the money you can get. Tell them I'm giving money for free because I don't have no kids. You get all my money. Join us again for the next episode of the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. If you have any comments about our show, please contact us via email at voramed@gmail.com or at vorjasonl@gmail. You can also find us on Twitter at @AdOnSports and at @JasonLee1. Our show's Twitter handle is @VORPodcast. You can check out our Facebook page and also find and subscribe to free episodes of our podcast in all the places where you find interesting content. Be sure to review our show as well. We love to get your feedback, and it helps us grow our audience. Until next time, along with Amy Donaldson, I'm Jason Lee. When you engage in passionate debate, do your best to keep your dialogue civil. Try to be the voice of reason.
Voices of Reason is a production of the Loudmouth Project.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.